So first, I am gonna thank you all for coming. It looks like there are 25 of us online, which is like as many as we would be at the Zendo. Let's see. I'm going to, because we can't really go around and say names, it doesn't work like that. I'm going to go around and just greet each person that I can see. I'll have to scroll to the next screen, but I should, in case anybody online doesn't know, Zoom has two different views. So the controls will be different places on your screen depending on your computer or your laptop or your tablet. But if you move the cursor or your finger, there's a speaker view and a gallery view. And so speaker view will have whoever's speaking large, and you'll just see a few other people. Gallery view shows you as many people as your screen can accommodate, which on the phone is like four people, tablet is about nine people. My laptop shows 16 people. If you have a big computer, you can see as many as 49. So I will just greet Franklin and Susan, Joan, Mark, and Dawn, who will be presenting our class, and Jinryu, James, Richard, Jeff, Cameron, and Claudia, Linda, and Jim, and Jill, Gathel, and Bruce, and Shoketsu, and Shri, and Karen, and Myoju, and Rachel, Coral, and Carson on the same computer, Sarah, and Yeshe. I think that's everyone. People kind of rearranged while I was doing that, so hopefully I didn't miss anybody. Let's see, in terms of announcements, let's see. I believe Saturday, and if you know of an announcement and you want to just unmute yourself and jump in, you can. I know there's a poetry group on Saturday that's going to be meeting via Zoom. Sunday we will as meet as we did this previous Sunday via Zoom.
Is it the poetry group or is it the book group on Saturday?
It's the book group.
Oh, is it
Okay.
the book group on Saturday? Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, the calendar will be right. It's a book group on Saturday. Yeah, because it's the poetry group. We'll also meet online, but that will be the week after that. I think that's it. The book group will be talking about the Wholehearted Way. And let's see, anything else I wanna say? I guess I can just say that in terms of the way that this class will work, I will turn it over to Dawn, and I will be keeping an eye on the chat feature, which if you again, if you curse air over your screen and you see your controls, there should be a like a little talk bubble that says chat. And if you click on that, you can type in a question, or once, I'll take Dawn's lead, but if she wants to just kind of open it up, what we might want to do is have people, you could just write your name in there, and then I can call on people in the order that they put their names in there, because it's just on this kind of meeting, it's a little tricky to just, jump in and have an open conversation, because we can't really see when people are raising their hands, and nobody wants to talk over other people. So I think that's it. If Dawn, if you wanna go ahead.
Okay, I think I'm unmuted. Can you all hear me? I see thumbs up. Okay, excellent. I apologize for the lighting situation. I know I look completely washed out. If I don't use this light, I can't see my notes. So that was the trade-off. Backlit or see my notes. But welcome to my study. It's been fun for me. I logged on Sunday and again today. It's been fun for me to see the places where people are. It's like another little glimpse into our lives. So that there has been some good to this online world that we find ourselves in. So I'm going to present on the second precept, which is do not steal. Sometimes it's translated as honor the gift not yet given, or being content with what we have. And what I'd like to do, well, let me back up a little bit. First, I'm just going to say, probably like all of you, I'm really tired right now. I'm finding the world we live in pretty exhausting. So I will do the absolute best I can, but just know that, I'm not sick, but I just have not felt like I'm really on top of my game for the last few days, which is all the more reason to be doing this tonight, because it's been a really great sort of way to focus my energy. So Domio, I appreciate the opportunity very much. And I recommend this if you ever kind of want to jump in and do one of these classes one year. It really is a great way to learn more about a precept if you realize you're going to have to present it. So I recommend it. What I thought I would do tonight, sort of the order of what I'm going to talk about, is I wanted to take a moment and talk about why I took Jikai, because that is what we're leading up to, is the Jikai ceremony. I want to talk about the sources that I used. I found a couple of new ones. I want to talk for just a moment about the process that I used to prepare my little talk tonight. And I wanted to obviously talk about the specific precept, but I also wanted to talk a little bit about just sort of my thinking about precepts and how that's kind of evolved over time. And then, like Domio said, we'll open it up. I like the idea. We did this on Sunday of having you just chat or type your name in the chat function if you have a question, and then we can just take them that way. I do not consider myself the teacher, but more the discussion leader. So we'll just see how that goes. So if that makes sense, that's kind of what I had in mind. So why did I take Jikai? I think that commitment before a community of people really helps to hold oneself accountable. At least that's certainly true for myself. There's something I think really powerful about public ceremony. It draws the people that are in attendance into the relationship with the person or the people who are involved in making whatever the commitment is. It feels very binding to me. I think weddings have this same sort of quality. And I know that I am more surprised and a little more upset when I hear about a couple that broke up and I was at their wedding. And I think that's because we were all in this together. It has that kind of feel to it. So when I put on my Wagesa, it reminds me of that commitment that I made with all of you, with my Sangha. And it reminds me of the interconnection that we all have as a Sangha. And for me, that's a very powerful experience. And it's one that I actually hold very dear. So if you're considering taking Jikai, I just wanted to reflect to you that that's why I did it. And I would encourage it. I think it's a very meaningful thing. So the sources that I used for this talk, I am a big podcast listener. I have a little dog that some of you got to meet earlier who loves to walk. So we go out walking every morning and I listen to a lot of podcasts. And I stumbled across the one that Tricycle Magazine puts out called Tricycle Talks. I don't know if anybody else listens to it. It's really good. And the editor, James Shaheen, does interviews with just all kinds of folks, many people that have recently written a book. And he did an interview with a priest in New York by the name of Koshin Paley Ellison, who was not somebody I was familiar with. But Ellison is the priest and the founder of the New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care in New York City. And he wrote a book called wholehearted, slow down, help out, and wake up. And I was really intrigued with the interview. So that's it. Richard has it. I only have it on my iPad, so I can't do that. And on my phone now, too. I've been listening to it as well. I didn't get the sense when I listened to the podcast that it was about the precepts, but I picked up the book and started reading it, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is about the precepts. And I loved the book. So that was a source this time that I drew on quite a bit. I also reread the chapter for the second precept in the Robert Aiken book, The Mind of Clover, which I do have right here. Went back and reread the precept guide. And then I also just did a Google search and found a really wonderful article, also by nobody I'd ever heard of, which doesn't necessarily mean a thing, but by a person whose name I will probably not say right, a Zen priest by the name of Seth Zuiho Segal. I don't know if I said that right or not. But he wrote a really nice essay called, appropriately, The Second Precept, which I also drew from quite a bit. So those were the sources that I used for the talk this time. And in terms of my process and sort of what it was I went through to kind of come to this place where I felt like I had something to say to y'all about this, was, first of all, this is the same one that I chose last year. And I chose it last year because it was literally the only class that would fit in my schedule. I chose it this time because I wanted to see if my thinking had changed, if it had deepened, if it had expanded, if it had, I don't know what. I was just really curious if I gave it another really intensive look, if it would seem different to me. And I think that it did. The Ellison book that I mentioned really kind of expanded my thinking around this notion of being content with things just as they are, because that is the way that he defines the precept. And that was a little bit new. I didn't have that same sort of sense of it last time. I also found myself thinking more about what's considered sort of the antidote to this precept, and that's generosity. I didn't focus as much on that last time either, but the world we live in now, I've just seen a lot, just really beautiful acts of generosity, which sort of made me focus on that more as well. Last year when I presented this precept, the big focus of conversation when we opened it up was the college admission scandal. I remember that very clearly. And now people are probably thinking, the what? Because this was a year ago and it doesn't even seem relevant anymore. We just live in a totally different world. And I would not be truthful if I said that the coronavirus didn't influence the way I thought about it this time. It definitely did. The thing that occurred to me, though, is just how amazingly adaptable and resilient the precepts are. They seem to fit the world we live in, even as it changes as dramatically as it recently did. So I did that, but then what I did was I just let the concept of the second precept roll around in my head for about a month. So very intentionally, right about February 17th, I was just like, okay, here we go. From this point until March 17th, I'm going to sort of keep this precept as, you know, well as I can, sort of top of mind. Notice when I break it, and notice how that has an effect on my behavior. And my intention was not to solve this precept, but really just to see how things shifted and occurred to me as I went through the month. And because I am so high tech, I kept notes on my phone, which turned out to be really easy. I would notice it and put something on my phone. So before I talk about the precept itself, I wanted to just reflect for a moment about how I kind of think about the precepts at this point in my practice, because I find that that continues to shift and change too. I agree, it's clear in the precept guide, that the precepts are not intended to be rules. I think it's really easy at first, sure I did this too, to read them as thou shalt nots, like the commandments in the Bible. I don't think that's their intent. At least for me, they've become sort of the grounding to my formal practice in my everyday life and experience. So a particular focus of my practice for a while now has been how to take the formal practice and really live it in my everyday life. And I've really come to believe that the precepts are a big part of that key. And so I continue to sort of view them that way. As Bruce said to me the other day, Bruce, I think you're here. And I totally agreed with this. He said, my practice used to feel like a hobby, but now it feels like my life. And I really can understand that progression. And for me, it's been my sort of my relationship with the precepts that have helped to further that. And I do prefer the term relationship personally with the precepts as opposed to wrestling with the precepts. I thought a lot about this time around. I couldn't quite put my finger on what it was that I found a little not right for me about that concept of wrestling. So I just looked up the word in the dictionary, and it has this element of sort of forcing to it. When you're wrestling and you pin somebody to the mat, that's when you win. And I realized that that is not exactly the relationship I was going for with the precepts. I like the idea more of relationship, even sort of a dance with the precepts. That works better for me. The precept guide has the phrase, learning to step out of conditional habit energy. And that was the kind of thing that I was trying to get at too, with my thinking about the precepts. And then Ellison said, the precepts are more like the North Star. We work towards them, but we never really arrive. The precepts are an invitation for us to investigate our own lives and causes of pain for ourselves and others. That to me is really the essence of it in my own practice. And if ever there was a world in need of that kind of practice, I think we're living in it right now. I think the beauty of the precepts is that they seem so straightforward, but I beginning to notice how really subtle and complex they really are. And I'm hoping that I can kind of draw some of that out with what I've been thinking about in the second precept. So, like I said before, there are several ways that this precept is translated. Do not steal, training in the practice of non-greed, honor the gift not yet given, being content with what you have. And on the surface, this seems pretty straightforward. And I think also on the surface, it seems like a pretty easy one to keep because most of us are not in the habit of robbing banks or mugging people on the street or any of those sort of really overt ways when we think about stealing. But I think that's really its surface, really its simplest form or reading. And I think if you dig a little deeper, there is a lot here. And I think this precept, when I was working with it, seemed particularly suited to the time that we live in. So let me walk you through some of the things I've been thinking about. And many of these are not original, but I've just sort of pulled them out from my readings because they really resonated with me. First of all, there is definitely a subtle sort of form of not stealing that I think it's really easy to engage in a lot and you don't even realize you're doing it. The book mentions things like taking a pen home with you, taking paper clips, you know, those sorts of subtle things. I will confess to you that on my last actual meal in a restaurant, which was about a week ago now, my husband and I went to Burgerville on a way to a meeting, and I asked for a water cup with every intention of getting water, but then noticed that they had soda, you know, just the plain soda on the fountain. And so I got that instead. And I immediately turned to Sean, my husband, and said, I think I just stole a couple soda, and I'm going to have to confess that in my talk. So I am confessing that to you. It was so easy. I didn't even think about it. But then I, so it definitely has this everyday sort of subtle quality to it. I will say that when I noticed I did that, it sure brought that precept right back to front of mind again. And it sat there for several more days. But I want to expand out from that sort of simple thinking. And I don't mean easy. I just mean easier to define way of thinking about this precept. Lots of things, if you really start to think about it, can be stolen. Ideas can be stolen. And there's a fair amount of discussion about this right now in women's circles about how, and I've had this experience several times, where I've been in a meeting with both men and women where I have raised an idea or a concern or whatever, had it sort of acknowledged, had a man raise basically the same thing and have it much more broadly acknowledged. And I've even said out loud, I think that's just what I said. So that sort of unintentional kind of stealing is a pretty prevalent experience for a lot of women. Certainly I've experienced it. Expand out even further. Corporations are made of people. So corporations can violate the second precept. And in fact, they do all the time. How many of you got money back from ARCO because they were overcharging customers who used a debit card at the gas station? It was like six or seven. I did. I got a nice check in the mail. I was like, what is this? It was because they had been overcharging if you used your debit card. And so they had to return the money they had stolen. People in positions of power are making choices that are endangering and stealing the planet from us, potentially by making large parts of our planet uninhabitable. We all know this is going on. And I think as we learn more and more, it's becoming clearer to us that the oil and gas companies have known this for some time. There's a lot of reporting around that at this point. Then there's the whole issue of fast fashion. Are folks familiar with the fast fashion controversy? This one was a, oh, duh, sort of moment for me, but I had not heard the term before until maybe just a few months ago. So there are fashion producers like Zara or H&M that produce inexpensive synthetic fabrics that are made from fossil fuels. And so when they go in a landfill, they don't decompose. And they will go in a landfill because this is not clothing that's intended to be kept. It's inexpensive and it's trendy. And so it's intended to be bought, worn a few times, and then discarded. And the folks that are making this clothing, are often very poor people in very poor parts of the world, often women and children, and at times even enslaved people. So the Uyghurs in China, they're a Muslim minority group in China. Many have been sent to Chinese re-education camps, and they've been forced into making this clothing, which is then being sourced to large corporations to sell, one of which is Costco. And in fact, people have even bought this clothing and found a note from a Uyghur person who was forced to make the clothing. So this whole issue of fast fashion is one that I've really been thinking a lot about. Not a good way to conduct ourselves in terms of sort of encouraging that kind of abuse of people. Governments can violate the second precept. I think we are experiencing that now with the missteps this government made in allowing the virus to take hold in this country. But there is another group of Americans who know what it's like to survive a pandemic. Gay Americans know what it's like to survive a pandemic. When the AIDS epidemic first started in the early 1980s, The Reagan administration joked about it as a gay plague. And after the jokes, nothing but complete apathy from the federal government. By the end of his presidency in 1989, Reagan had done nothing of substance, and the United States had suffered 90,000 deaths of gay Americans. The death rate was rapidly rising when he left office, and more than 300,000 people would die before the epidemic came under better control 7 years later. The AIDS quilt is too large. It doesn't fit on the National Mall. In my opinion, that apathy, that inaction, that frankly homophobia, the government stole these people's lives. I hope we've learned that lesson. I think time is going to tell. So bring it back down again. The toilet paper hoarding makes perfect sense. It feels like an attempt to exert just a little control over a situation that feels like it has been completely out of control. Those are such human feelings: greed, hoarding, taking more than we really need. I think those are the things that we as Buddhists can work with. Those are the very human feelings I think we can work with this precept. Ellison in his book says, and I love this phrasing, there's a tendency to adjust our environments to us instead of the other way around. I think also we're in a period of time where it's just imperative that we work with these feelings because, and I've experienced this myself the last few days, the probability of robbing ourselves of our own peace of mind around this is really high. And I think that's also where the Buddhist practice really comes in. So what's one of the anecdotes to the second precept? I keep wanting to say the second amendment. That's like in my brain, the second precept. Most of the readings point to acts of generosity. And I have to say the situation we're in right now, I have been so touched by the kindness I've seen. I learned the other day that Laughing Planet, you know, there's one right around the corner from Brightway. Restaurants are not open. They're doing takeout if they can. Laughing Planet is fixing meals for kids who are on free and reduced school lunches and don't have access to that food right now. They're making use of their kitchen in a very generous way. Street Roots, the little paper that's put out by folks, and they sell street corners, mostly in downtown Portland. They're houseless folks. I didn't realize this, but that model is that each of those vendors is actually a little independent business. So they purchase the papers for a quarter and sell them for a dollar. Well, there aren't people wandering around downtown the way there usually are. So the folks at Street Roots are stipending their workers. And one of the things their workers are doing at this point is taking sanitation supplies like bleach and hand sanitizer to houseless folks who are going to be devastated by this without that kind of support. That's beautiful. The people in Italy singing on their balconies to cheer one another. Have you seen those videos? Oh my gosh, I have to get a Kleenex out every time. I've noticed that there are free concerts online now. There's one I have marked on my calendar because the Indigo Girls are streaming free on Thursday. I love them. I noticed that there are Broadway musicals being streamed online now that were taped live. The poems that you all are sharing, Cameron, the one you wrote was beautiful. This is giving me hope. I'm checking in on my neighbors. My neighbors are checking in on me. Just acts of kindness. They're just everywhere. We live in a time where generosity and extending grace, it just feels like a lifeline to me right now. It feels like nourishment. What else can I do to ease the fear and the suffering of others right now and extend my own grace? That's what I've been thinking a lot about. So being content with things just as they are. I'm going to end with this little story. I encountered this story a long time ago in a book that I read by Pema Chodron. And this kind of stuff doesn't usually stick with me, but this little story really stuck with me. So I'm just going to read, this is Pema's writing, so I'm just going to read this real quick. It's just a little short paragraph. There is a story of a woman running away from tigers. She runs and runs, and the tigers are getting closer and closer. And when she comes to the edge of a cliff, she sees some vines there, so she climbs down and holds onto the vines. Looking down, she sees there are tigers below her as well. She then notices a mouse is gnawing away at the vine to which she is clinging. She also sees a beautiful little bunch of strawberries close to her, growing out of a clump of grass. She looks up, she looks down, she looks at the mouse, and then she takes a strawberry and puts it in her mouth and enjoys it thoroughly. Tigers above, tigers below, this is actually the predicament that we are always in terms of our birth and our death. Each moment is just what it is. It might be the only moment of our life. It might be the only strawberry we'll ever eat. We could get depressed about it, or we could finally appreciate it and delight in the preciousness of every single moment of our life. Even in the worst of times, sweetness is always available to us. Thank you. So I did time that this morning and I was right. It took about 25 minutes, which leaves us with about a half an hour. So Domio, I look to you. How do you want to do this?
I guess I would just say, please go ahead and type your name in the chat if you have a question or something you would like to say. And if you can't figure out how to use the chat, go ahead and unmute yourself and say so.
Okay. I have a hard time with the hoarding thing. I don't get it. I think it's wrong. I simply don't understand how people can be so selfish. I don't understand it, and it really pains me because, I mean, forget the toilet paper, you know, that's one thing. But there's so many other things that people are just taking without thought. And I think the second precept for me specifically is not just about stealing, but taking what is not yours. And that could mean conversation, discussion, which I am very guilty of because I'm very talkative. And taking time away from somebody else, taking resources away from somebody else without knowing. So I think the hoarding is so such an obvious thing that I don't get how people do it.
Yeah, and I'll just add my thought and anybody else. It's an interesting thing. I think for myself, I'll just speak from my own sort of thoughts right now. I think people are just scared. And I think it feels like one way to control your environment. If that means less resources for other people, you are absolutely right. I don't think that's the motivation. I went to Whole Foods last night thinking surely they have food because it's more expensive. Oh my God. It was really stunning how empty a lot of the shelves were. I think it's just, and you know what? And so I walked around Whole Foods thinking people are scared. And I can understand that. And I try to just use it to just extend grace. That's all I can think to do right now. I found a couple things that I needed. I bought the last fake beef crumbles they had. it's a challenging time. That's just my thought. I don't know what anybody else would like to say.
I guess I would just, say I do understand it. I mean, when I went to the store and when I see half empty shelves, I have never encountered that before in my life. And that is that's scary. It triggers a sense of scarcity in me. And I think, you know, down the line, like, is it all going to be gone and won't be able to get what I need? You know, I mean, then you kind of think rationally, right? And you say, okay, they say the supply chains are fine and I don't want to take this stuff that somebody else might need more. So we may be able to talk ourselves down from it, but I certainly personally, I'm not saying it's that we should go out and hoard, but relate to that fear. So next on the, looked like Franklin, do you want to just unmute yourself and ask your...
You're still muted. There you are.
Yeah, sometimes the space bar works, sometimes it doesn't. Anyway, yeah. I think early on in your talk, you had sort of summarized different interpretations.
Yeah.
And I was kind of half listening to those. And I'd love to hear that again. I think there was like three or four different.
I think that's one of the really interesting things about the precepts is the more you, the more sources you gather, which I think for me is really useful, the more ways you'll find that these are defined. And it's useful for me because like many adult learners, sometimes I have to hear things several different ways before it finally starts to penetrate. So the way that I found that this one is often translated is do not steal, but also train in the practice of non-greed. Mm. Honor the gift not yet given, which is also, I think, another way of saying being content with what you have. So those were the primary ways. I thought, Domio, do you know of other ways that this one is interpreted or translated or whatever the term might be?
I can't think about the top of my head.
Those are the four I could find. There's a lot in those four. I could have sort of focused the whole thing on more thinking about greed. I tried to broaden it to more aspects around the whole idea, but you could really just hone in on one of these sort of translations for a long time.
Yeah, what I think's really cool about it is it sort of adds dimensions to it. It really fleshes it out, and it's almost like a jewel, right? It's got different sides to it.
Totally, yeah.
That's what I like about that.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I think the other thing that's really helpful for me when I go through these precepts is to also really take a look at what the anecdote is, if you will. I use that word because I think it's kind of relevant. You know, what is the quality we want to try to really foster in ourselves to, I won't say keep us from, but sort of make us more mindful of when we might be moving down the road of something that's more stealing or hoarding or greed. That happens all the time mm-hmm. in big mm-hmm. and small ways. And in ways I think we don't always realize we're contributing to, which was why I talked about the fast fashion movement. I like clothes. I've become a lot more mindful about where I buy them. And I'm not going to H&M. I never really have, but I'm not going there now. And I've stopped buying clothing from Costco. I'm dubious of that sourcing now.
I know, now I'm sad. That's like my clothier.
I know, right? I have the same problem. But they need to do better, and maybe they will.
Yeah, they do.
This has gotten a fair amount of press, so.
Thanks, Don. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Franklin. Muju. I see you waving your hand. You're muted. We cannot hear you. There you go.
I just want to say that when you guys talked about the hoarding and the reason people do it, I think it's such an important practice to understand why, like, to for me personally, like, instead of judging them, like, this is fear, and that's what people do when they're afraid. And so on my Facebook, someone said, hi world, this is Kashmir. How does the lockdown feel? Then I started thinking about the Kashmiris who have been in lockdown for 3 months, no internet. Their children have been taken from them, the young men, and they have no idea where they are, if they'll ever see them again.
Yeah.
And then I thought about the Palestinians. Now, I'm at this point, that's my practice that I'm trying to do, is get into the skin of those people so that it's just not a statistic, like so many died and so many, even with this virus, like, you know, before I said, like, Wuhan, where is Wuhan? Like, all these people. Now I think, oh, this is someone's grandmother and someone. I know it can overwhelm, but I'm not there yet. I'd rather be overwhelmed than go back into this deadening place where I don't understand. We are definitely much better off in not than those people in Gaza, where they can get killed or where they, and this is, they've been suffering this for how long? And they are people just like us. So that's my practice right now, that I've been trying to purposely kind of, it's like a mind training, heart training thing that I'm doing. Okay, you feel like this? Think about those guys. You have food. You can go outside for a walk. Nobody's shooting you down yet, you know? So that's just my practice right now. So
Myoju, that is exactly why I don't understand it, is because I've been living in conditions where it's been riots, curfews. People don't do that. Because you don't know how people don't hoard. People don't try to, you know, people actually come out and share things, which is why this is, the reactions here has been a little alienating almost. And that's why I don't get it, because I've been in those situations and people have been really kind.
There are
lots of very kind people, lots of very kind, like Don was saying, lots of very kind acts too, but human beings on a spectrum, you know, some people have a practice and they're lucky to be able to open their hearts, and some don't know how to, and we don't know why, so it doesn't benefit us to question that. You just do what you have to do. That's what I think.
I appreciate it. Gato, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I think, you know, we wonder, you know, what's the business with hoarding toilet paper? And Sri was commenting that she's lived through stuff and people don't hoard. Well, very, very few Americans have lived through anything.
Yeah, for sure.
And toilet paper, I mean, I recently downloaded a free short story on Audible, and it was a zombie hunter. And one of the things he found when he went to hospital was toilet paper, and it was a big deal. And toilet paper has kind of taken on this status of, you know, the special thing, you know, when you're reading fiction and such, you know, they find toilet paper, it's a big deal. And I think it has taken on a status beyond its function, which is really a pretty base function.
There have been some just really funny memes on Facebook, though, so it has had a humorous quality. But yeah. The reason I raised the what happened to gay Americans in the 1980s and early 90s was because actually a lot of Americans have been through a pandemic, and they were so marginalized at that point in time that it isn't part of our common history. And so that's why I raised that up, because I think there's, I just have allergies, because I think there's a lot to learn in their experience. in San Francisco, where just a lot of people died. The lesbians who were also part of that community but weren't as affected cared for the gay men as they were dying, because there was no help from the government. That sort of thing really moves me. I think when put in difficult situations, and I don't know that we're there yet in this country, although we could get there, people will do really generous and extraordinary things. So that's the kind of thing I hold on to.
I just want to point out that you felt you needed to clarify that it was just allergies, even though we are online and there's no, like, not even, forget the 10 feet.
I think it's just a thing I say at this point, because if you cough in public, people look at you, and I don't blame them. But yeah, I get this every year. What else? Anybody else have anything?
I do. This is Karen.
Hi, Karen.
So I was thinking about, as we were doing our meditation tonight, I was watching the flow of thoughts and realizing how much we create, like the brain just creates stuff. And it's in that creation that, you know, I mean, in one person's experience of this is they can experience joy, and even in a pandemic, you know, and another person's experience is being afraid. Mm-hmm. And so, and I see that in my own, watching my own mind do its funny little things, you know, just all kinds of stuff coming up. Oh, I'm dreaming right now. Wait, I need to be, you know, like catching myself, in my mind entertaining, you know, myself in the moment and losing track of what's real and flipping between what my brain is creating versus just what is.
Yes.
I think that's how, for me, I understand how other people are reacting, because I mean, we all have these brains and they do all kinds of things and we don't really have a whole lot of control over it sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. That's why I read the little story about the tigers and the strawberry, because that in a sort of a parable way sort of points out that you have that choice. I mean, it's not easy, but you have that choice. One thing I noticed today, I went out for a walk. It was a beautiful day. Went out for a walk, and I'm in far south Beaverton, and it's usually really busy out here. There's not much traffic. It was, and there were lots of people out walking. And like Domi, you said earlier, nobody got very close to each other, but we all waved. We all smiled. You know, it's a choice to do those things, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah, I really love that allegory with the strawberry. It's so, so beautiful.
That's the mouse that always gets me. I was like, there's already tigers. Why throw in the mouse? Like, we get it. We get it. It's not good. For some reason, there's also that mouse. What else?
Jeff, do you want to mute yourself and ask your question?
There. Am I unmuted?
Yes.
Yes.
Can you guys see me?
No.
No.
Interesting. I, on my side, I see this frozen picture of myself, but it's not actually a live video for some reason.
Have you tried to stop your video and start it again?
Yeah, I've tried that a couple times, and it'll capture a screenshot, and then it freezes again. But anyway, I'll talk to Zach. He seems to be our resident expert on these things, and see if he has an idea. Well, I just commented that I really appreciate your comment, Don, that there's endless subtle aspects to these precepts. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if anyone can relate to my concern that it's possible to steal. I'm concerned about my potential for stealing, even in the example of being unable to be totally present with another person.
Yeah.
Or a group of persons. And so if I'm caught up in my thoughts, or I'm thinking about what I'm going to say, or I'm thinking about what's going on at work tomorrow, then in a sense, I'm stealing from that person's full attention. I wonder if anyone can relate to that.
That was in one of those sources I read, just exactly that kind of thing. And I actually was going to include it. I think it's a really important one. And I edited it out just because I think there's so much to this precept. But yes, I think that happens all the time when we're just not present with people, or as present as we could be. And the obvious thing is when you're checking your phone instead of really, there you're back. Instead of really being engaged in a conversation.
Yeah.
And everybody just moved around. That's a little distracting. I mean, that's my thought.
Yeah, thank you, Don.
Yeah.
I would just add to that I think everybody can relate to it.
That's what I think. Yeah, when I read that one, I was like, oh, yeah, we do that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really my concern. It feels for me that it's so persistent as to be a little overwhelming at times. So I go back and say, well, at least I haven't robbed any banks yet.
Right. I think that's a really good point. That was one of the things I tried to say was the subtleness of this precept, probably all the precepts, but this one to me is really, really pretty amazing, because when you see just the way it's translated most frequently, just do not steal, it's easy to just go, well, I haven't done that in a long time. But then you start thinking about not giving people your full attention, robbing them of your presence. It just goes on and on.
Yeah.
There's a lot there.
I particularly like the being satisfied with things as they are, which seems like, I mean, that's kind of the essence of Buddhist practice. Mm-hmm. You know, dukkha is caused by not being satisfied with things as they are, and then there's the part of the commentary of the precept. The self and the things of the world are just as they are. The mind and its object are one. The gateway to enlightenment stands open wide. And when we're not feeling satisfied, when there's something that we really want or need, or we want to have change, like the mind and its object seem very, very, they do not seem one for sure. So how do we, I don't know. I mean, then people are talking, you're talking about the not paying full attention and robbing people of our presence. And I guess I think about how often I rob myself or my deeper self of the opportunity to just appreciate being alive. For instance, during Zazen, where I'm going to just be like, entertaining myself, or you know, planning for how to change things or get things, as opposed to, you know, like that, those are moments that I will not get back. Those are moments that I could be appreciating my life right here.
Yeah. Yeshe, did you want to say something?
I unmuted. There we go.
We can hear you. Yeah.
So kind of piggybacking on to what Jeff and Domio said, one about, at least for me, being present versus if I'm not present, I'm stealing, or I don't know if I'm stealing, but I'm definitely losing out on an offering that's been given to me every single moment. Or sometimes it's things like being in a place where there's so much lighting, I'm losing out on the stars and the moon and relationship with them because they're not apparent to me. You know, they're only apparent to me in my imagination. They're not visible. Mm-hmm. With all this lighting around. And then something else that came up where I've asked myself how best to handle this is that I live with, kind of sort of live with two people, and one who throughout his entire life basically describes himself as being the prince, and if he doesn't get what he wants, he's just constantly complaining, yelling, and sometimes I can give him a lot of presence, but I'm at the point where stop robbing everyone around you of some calmness and tranquility and just even silence. And I'm still trying to figure out how to handle that within myself, and sometimes I just have to, or I don't have to, I choose just to walk away, mm-hmm. and go retreat because I don't want to have to listen to the endless complaining and yelling about nothing and the complete lack of gratitude for so many things that this person has been given. So I don't want to go into, I mean, I can go into understanding with this person, and sometimes we dialogue about it, and sometimes it's fine, but then it just goes on and on again, and I find I'm at the point where this is the reality he wants to live. It's not the reality that I want to live. I'll listen to it for as long as I have to, but then I'm walking away. And I don't know if that's the best way to handle it, but it's the way I'm handling it now.
It seems reasonable to me.
Well, if I can jump in, one thing I observed, particularly as my mother aged, because my father was the first of my parents to die, I think people, as they age and they know that that they may not have another year or two or three, they get pretty down and they feel sorry for themselves. And it's very sad. And I remember my mother sobbing to me over the phone, would I like to be in her shoes? And the fact of the matter, what to me was that she had a lot to be grateful for, but she was not able to see it that way. And I think her age had a lot to do with it. So, I mean, that's when there's nothing else for me to fall back on except for compassion in that situation.
Yeah.
Well, it is 8:59. So I can end with we don't usually end with a verse, but it feels more appropriate to do that when we're all online here rather than just like disappear. So Dawn, do you have any closing words?
Thank you all for the opportunity. Thank you for listening. I hope it was useful. Something sparked something in you that you want to look into. I will say, if you're going to be a presenter, this is different. Because people are doing things and then all the icons change. So just be mentally prepared for that.
People's pets walk by.
It was fun though. I enjoyed it.
Actually, thank you all for the inputs on the hoarding. I think it's definitely given me a different perspective, so thank you.
Oh, thanks for raising it. It's a thing.
Okay, so I'll say the closing verse. So I say the first part alone, and then when I ring the bell, everybody can join in if you know it. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time. All honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas. Wisdom beyond wisdom. Maha Prajna Paramita. Oh, and don't forget we do meditate 7:30 to 8:30 a.m. Wednesday through Saturday at this same number. So come on and join us. Have a good evening, everyone.
Thank you, Dawn.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Dawn.
Thank you, Dawn. You did a great job.
It was wonderful, Dawn. Thank you.
Yeah.
We don't have to clean anything up, wash any